Good evening. You're listening to Outsources, a KGNU Boulder Denver program that brings you stimulating and thoughtful perspectives on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. As always, I'm pleased to be here with you for another episode of Colorado's only regularly scheduled LGBT-themed radio show. I'm very excited to speak with tonight's guest. Her work is a big, big shot of punky riot girl adrenaline. Some Outsources listeners might remember that I interviewed local queer comics writers Melanie Gilman and Dylan Edwards back in April of last year. Tonight we'll be revisiting the topic of queer/trans comics. With me on the phone is trans woman comics writer Magdalene Visaggio. Magdalene is the creator of the comic series Kim and Kim. The two Kims, trans woman Kim Quattro and her cisgender best friend Kim Dantzler, are planet-hopping, interdimensional queer bounty hunters who carry out their assignments with a punk rock riot girl vibe. These two badass chicks don't care who you are and aren't afraid to do battle with robot gorillas, among a host of other villains sent their way. Both critics and readers have hailed Kim and Kim as a breakthrough comic. Bleeding Cool named Kim and Kim one of the six books that made comics fun in 2016. Daryl Suduka, writing for The Mary Sue, takes it a step further and calls Kim and Kim the funnest book of the summer, bar none. If fun is the operative word, let's try to have some of that right now. Magdalene, thanks for taking the time to be on Outsources.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Starting out, I'm wondering if you might tell our listeners why you decided to write the Kim and Kim comic, and do you see it as a story with a long run or a long-term arc? And if you want to add any more to the premise, I already sort of introduced it, but you want to add anything more to the basic premise, feel free.
Well, the basic premise, pardon, is that Kim and Kim is about a couple of best friends who launch an interdimensional bounty hunting business out of their flying van to sort of this madcap sort of action comedy with a lot of really heavy emotions propelling it. The story behind how I came up with it is not actually terribly long or interesting. It was just kind of a mishmash of different genres that I really like. In a lot of ways, Kim and Kim was just a giant exercise in me sort of training myself out of some bad storytelling habits, or not even storytelling habits, I guess some bad writing habits that would make it very difficult for me to finish things. I would get so caught up in like the larger world I was creating that I would often kind of lose sight of what made the story function dramatically. And so Kim and Kim was just sort of a big process of me just sort of saying yes to everything instead of getting caught up saying no to everything because, like, it wasn't realistic enough. So it's just kind of any weirdo idea that I had, I just sort of threw it into a pot and stirred it around. And as far as if I want it to be a long-term book, I mean, yeah, I think every creator who puts pen to paper in comics is ultimately interested in doing something that's going to last. And because comics are periodical, the best way for that to happen is, you know, to have something that stays on the shelves month after month after month after month after month. And that's definitely something that we're trying to find a way to do. It's just a matter of, like, figuring out a way to make it work financially for a bunch of reasons, mostly because the book does really well in sort of the trade aftermarket, but it's not the, I mean, aftermarket selling used books. I mostly just mean, like, after you do a run of, like, four issues, you collect that in a volume, and you can also sell that, and that'll stay on bookshelves for a really long time. Mm. And the trades do really well, but single issues don't move as well as we'd like, so we're trying to figure out the cash flow on that.
And how many issues have you produced so far?
We're finalizing the eighth issue, so we did volume one last year, which is four issues. We're doing in the middle of volume four, right, of volume two right now, which is another four issues. And then we're hoping to do another volume next year or in 2019. But it's just a matter of figuring out a way to make that practical.
What's the best way for folks to get a copy of Kim and Kim issues or the collected sets?
Kim and Kim, at this point, is probably in your local comic shop. If it's not at your local comic shop, it should be available at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. If it's not at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million, you can get it off Amazon in both physical and digital copies.
Now, Kim and Kim features, as I mentioned in the intro, a trans woman, Kim Quattro, and a cisgender woman, Kim Dantzler, as its main characters, and they're best friends. And while the narrative seems, I would say, unapologetically trans, the focus of their story is not on Kim Quattro's transness. So how important was it to you to not focus the narrative on that one character's being trans or in transition, because she seems to be through her transition at that point.
That was hugely important for me, because I was super, 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 super early in my transition process when I was working on the book. And so I didn't want to do a story that was about the bold transition, because transition, you know, kind of sucks and it was scaring me. What I wanted to do was do a story where somebody was like already through that and was living their lives, as kind of a way to tell myself that there was an endpoint, that there was a world on the other end of the tunnel where you could just have a life and be a person again, and have that just be something that informs who you are, and not be the big giant mess that it was feeling at the time. Because the thing with Kim is that with Kim Quatro is that her transition is not just in her past; like, it's not a big deal anymore. And I'm pretty far into my transition at this point, so I get that it's not a big deal anymore. It's not a big scary mess. It's just this thing that I did.
What sort of relationship would you say you have with your trans character, Kim Quatro? Did writing her character help you work out your own trans and transition-related issues? Was she kind of a sounding board for you in your own life?
Not really, because the book doesn't really deal with that. For me, I was just a little bit aspirational. It was just kind of a way to get into the headspace and to remind myself that the whole thing wasn't forever. There are books where I do a lot more of that kind of psychological work on the page, but Kim and Kim isn't that.
So the Two Kims story has, as we've been talking about, at least in passing, some pretty fantastical settings featuring interstellar and interdimensional travel. And yet the two Kims have the sorts of problems that ordinary young women seem to have. They're often broke, they're squabbling with their parents, they're generally rebelling against authority. Is that something you went into the comic trying to put in there, or did that just sort of come out that way?
I honestly don't even know how to answer that. The book kind of emerged pretty organically. Their dynamic sort of happened as I was writing. The book didn't happen with a ton of planning, at least for the first issue. The first issue took a really long time to put together because I didn't know how to plan on a first issue at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was just a whole lot of me sort of figuring things out as I'm working. So that first issue went through like a million revisions. Sort of the really real stuff that they have to go through was probably mostly, more than anything, probably inspired by the anime Cowboy Bebop, which is just super, super real. It's super about like the sort of the on-the-ground freelancing life. And I've done a lot of freelancing, and my ex, who I was with at the time, was a full-time freelancer. And so I had all this experience with money woes and the stress that comes with that and the constant uncertainty. It was sort of as I was working on the book that I sort of realized that what it was really about was being in your early 20s more than anything else, like trying to be someone who's just trying to sort of set their life up, trying to be an adult for the first time and not really knowing how to do it in a way that is successful. But that wasn't anything that was like deliberate. All that stuff sort of happened as I was figuring out who these girls were and what their relationship was to their world as I was writing.
Kim and Kim seems to have a pretty prominent punk rock, or even better yet, Riot Girl vibe. Does third wave Riot Girl style feminism and culture play a major role? Did it play a major role in the creation and writing of your comic and in the way you see the world?
It's another question where I'm not super sure how to answer, largely because I'm not 100% educated on sort of the details of the different waves of feminism. So you might have to explain that for me for a second. Like, I'm not really sure what third wave is specifically, and that's something I'm embarrassed to admit.
Let me ask it a different way. Everything from the clothes and the attitude and to Kim Quatro wielding a bass guitar as a weapon seems to shout that punk and Riot Girl music has played a crucial role in the creation and direction of the narrative. Am I getting that correct, that's something that you're kind of immersed in?
Immersed is a strong word. It's something that I'm very indebted to in a lot of ways. So I have to back up a little bit to when I was in high school, and I was still kind of feeling out and experimenting with a trans identity, which I didn't really land on in a really definitive way for many years after that. But in high school, like, something in my mind kind of really clicked with that music. I can't remember where I first encountered that stuff, but it seemed really just vitally female in a way that really resonated with me, that mm-hmm. really spoke to me. It was brash and it was assertive. It was angry and it was playful and it was political. And I I just really kind of fell in love with that. And I've been listening to that stuff for years and years and years. I don't have like a deep knowledge of it because I'm just no good in getting into scenes. Like you can't follow everything. So I have the stuff that I listen to and I know all that. But so on Spin Data, Kim and Kim, that attitude, that aesthetic was something I sort of seized on pretty early because that was in a lot of ways sort of the woman I wanted to be. I wanted to put that on the page, and I wanted to explore that out. And I guess it was a lot of just sort of me dealing with femininity on the page. And so I guess there is some of that psychological work. I wasn't even thinking about that. You know, Kim and Kim is just so unabashedly girly in so many different and very diverse ways. You know, these very distinct explorations of femininity are sort of all over the page. It was an avenue for me to sort of assert femaleness through this cultural lens.
We could write a poem together. We could go home together. You connect with my couch and get bored and get high and then we could go protest together. We could be besties forever. We could pretend like we didn't get breakfast and get breakfast again. When you appear.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. Today we're speaking with Magdalene Visaggio. Magdalene is an out trans woman and creator of the critically lauded comic book, Kim and Kim.
We could be each other's queens, then we never need to meet no kings. We never need to meet no kings.
Shifting gears a little bit, about a year ago you wrote an essay for Paste where you examined cisgender representations of trans people and trans stories. I'm wondering if you might briefly recount your arguments that you make in that essay, and how do cisgender tellings of trans stories differ from trans stories written by trans people themselves?
I have to say, first off, I've backed off the point that I was making in that article a little bit. My position on that has shifted in the last year. Not like, well, I guess you can be the judge as to whether you think it's a wildly different position or not. The argument that I'm making is basically that in the wake of a bunch of different things that kind of happened in 2016, I was saying that, generally speaking, I would prefer it if cis writers didn't tell specifically trans stories, which is not the same thing as not creating trans characters. But I was like, don't tell transition stories, don't tell stories that try to communicate transness to people. And this whole thing was in response to this comic book called Alters, which is written by by a writer named Paul Jenkins, who I'm otherwise quite fond of, in which there's a trans superhero named Chalice. Chalice's whole deal in the first few issues is just that she's trans. The first issue is a 20-page comic, and there's a solid 7 pages. That's a third of the book dedicated to just a monologue on trans angst. There's very little characterization done. The character seems in a lot of ways very little more than a vessel for the writer to be like a nice liberal and to, you know, to think about the plight of the trans.
Right.
And I found that really frustrating, and that was what prompted that article. The core of the argument was that the reason you shouldn't do that is because, how to put it, it turns that stuff into spectacle. All it's really doing is sort of, in the argument at the time, is you're just sort of showing like a shining light on it, holding it up and saying, everyone look at this. Everyone look at the trans. Because when it's not done sensitively, that's what it always turns into. And I've seen that again and again and again and again. There's a really, really particularly problematic example in one of the greatest comic books being made right now. So there's a book called Saga, which is written by this guy named Brian K. Vaughan with art by Fiona Staples. And it's like consistently one of the best books on the shelves month after month after month after month. It's really incredible. So they've got a trans character who's named Perry, and P-E-R-I. And we find out Perry is trans in, I think, her second appearance, when a kid walks in on her in the shower, and we have this full body reveal of her just sort of standing in the shower nude.
Okay.
And you can see everything. And it's just kind of, everyone look at that. Like, there's very little sensitivity in the portrayal, at least in the reveal and how Vaughn handles transness almost across the board. He doesn't seem to know what to do with it.
So it felt kind of exploitative to you?
It's extraordinarily exploitative. And the worst part is that it's exploitative in a way that makes me think that they didn't even realize they were being exploitative. That they were like trying to like, we're going to challenge people. We're going to make them deal with a woman with a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without thinking about what that says to the trans readership or what that communicates about the character themselves. So in this, that scene, the person who walks in on this on Perry in the shower is a kid, like a maybe 6-year-old kid. The kid then proceeds to interrogate Perry about her genitals, and then Perry very patiently explains everything. What that does is, because of the little girl is the audience surrogate, she's the main character, she's the person whose eyes you're seeing all this through, you're absolving the readership of their responsibility for participating in this exploitation. You're basically just saying, this is fine, and we're going to double down on making it fine by having the trans character herself, who you've just walked into, very patiently explain the nature of being trans. But the reader isn't a 6-year-old kid. The reader's an adult.
Yeah.
And so that all of that is just so unbelievably, like, not okay. I did a Twitter thread about this, and I was able to speak a little bit with the creative team, and I've seen the conversations that I had with them sort of show up in other books.
Mm-hmm.
Or in sort of later issues. But that's the sort of thing that I was railing against in my article in Pace.
And so how has your position changed? You mentioned how it's changed. How have you moved forward with it?
Basically, and this has a lot to do with my own experience as a writer, but I really think a writer can basically write whatever they want as long as they're doing it sensitively and respectfully, with an eye to making sure that they're not being exploitative. Really, I've just become much more aware of the responsibility of the writer, and it's really just a matter of, how to put it, just at some level you have to trust people, because writers are going to do this, and you just have to, you can't ban people from writing about something. Like,
right.
You just can't do it, and so it's a matter of education and respect and trust, really. There are a few writers who I've seen handle this content extraordinarily well. Alex DeCampi has this book called No Mercy, which features a pre-transition trans guy who is basically sent to a conversion therapy camp, and it's super abusive. But, like, she handles the character so sensitively. There's just very little sense that I'm gaping. And that's, I guess, the big thing that I want to make sure that storytellers are avoiding, is basically they have to be aware of the cis gaze, and if they're not aware of the cis gaze, of the fact that their audience is cis, they have to be aware of that and what that means for the relationship of the audience to the text. And if you're not aware of that, don't do it. That's
right.
Basically my position at this point.
To buttress your point, how you've changed your position, I had Carolyn Woods on this show back in May of this year, and she'd written a novel called Fraulein M. And so Carolyn is a cisgender writer, but one of the characters was trans. The main part of the narrative was set in Germany in the 20s and 30s as Germany's slipping into the Nazi period. And I thought she did a really good job and very sensitive, but I think she went into it knowing that it was kind of dangerous territory and she needed to, you know, be really, really careful. And I think she was, and I think she largely succeeded in that. So for me, anybody who handles trans issues sensitively, I'm okay with. I mean, there are trans writers that can probably butcher trans characters. So, but I definitely take your point. It's kind of dangerous ground, which was, I think, kind of Imogene Binney's point in the forward to your first issue, where she was taking to task Neil Gaiman on the Sandman comics.
Yeah.
Where so many of the trans characters, there's a number of them, but they all seem to die.
Yep.
It's something that I think cis writers really need to be careful with. And I'm curious about finding a publisher for Kim and Kim. You, as a trans woman, in which a central character in the book is trans, was it hard for you to find a publisher for Kim and Kim?
Not the way that you might think. I didn't actually really get any pushback on that. Most of the difficulty in finding a publisher was in a lack of connections on my part. I did have interest from a couple of publishers that ended up not going through for a variety of reasons. Like, in one case, it was simply that the editor who needed to make the decision was too swamped to make the decision in time. And in another, they were very on board with the book, but discovered upon closer examination that they had a book that they thought was just too similar in premise, and they didn't want to publish both. As far as what ended up happening with Black Mask,
which was the publisher that ended up publishing Kim and Kim.
That's my publisher. Black Mask, I was already editing another book there. Like, and that's all freelance, so it's not like I was an employee. But I had a friend who had a book, and I was editing her book. She suggested that I apply when they, you know, opened up their submissions, and I submitted it, and it got picked up that night. Like, he was super on board with it.
Wow. Very cool. Didn't even have to think about it. That's great.
No, didn't have to think about it at all. Jumped right in.
Would you say that there's, do you think there's a quote-unquote critical mass of transgender writers and artists in the world of comics and graphic novels? And are there any other trans writers out there in the comics world that really excite you or catch your attention?
Well, what do you mean by a critical mass?
I mean, is there sort of a network of trans creators, writers, artists out there in the comics and graphic novel world that are producing narratives about trans characters? Or
That's a little complicated because comics as a field is a little complicated.
Okay.
If we're talking mainstream mass market comics, we're talking like periodicals, you know, Marvel, DC, IDW, Boom Studios, Dark Horse Comics, Image, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a really small number. At this point, it's probably just, oh God, it's probably just me, Sophie Campbell, Tamara Bonvalin. I want to say there's one more. I feel like I'm forgetting someone.
But all these folks are in what you would call non-mainstream or indie comics? No.
Okay. These are mainstream mass market comics.
Okay.
Sophie Campbell was the artist on Gem for a long time. Gem and the Holograms. She has a very well-regarded graphic novel series called Wet Moon. Tamara Bonvalin does tons of work for Marvel and DC.
Oh.
She's a colorist. So what she does is like, she actually just finishes on art. Sophie Campbell is a writer and an artist.
And, you know, I just want to say that I really love the artwork in Kim and Kim. I think it's really, I don't know, I really love it. It's just very eye-catching and
I do too.
Very, very well done. Do you have any interest in working on a film adaptation of Kim and Kim, whether it be animated or a live-action treatment?
That would be something I would absolutely love to happen.
And has anyone approached you, or have you approached anyone about going down that avenue?
That's not a thing I can talk about.
Okay. Do you have any other work you want to mention or other projects you've got in the hopper right now that you might want to talk about?
Oh man, I've got so much stuff I want to talk about, and I don't know how much I can talk about because the thing about comics is everything is withheld for PR reasons. And so you can't talk about it until the announcement so everyone can get maximum traction off the news. So I don't have a ton of stuff that's like out and about that I can actually be super public about. I ran a book earlier this year called Quantum Teens Are Go, which also features a trans woman among the protagonists. And that's a book that I'm absolutely in love with, and I would love to do more of it. The two main characters are this boyfriend and girlfriend, Nat and Sumash, and that's a 17-year-old trans girl. And these two kids are just like so broken and sad, and they're just like trying so hard to like create this future for themselves. And I just love those kids.
Oh, cool.
The basic premise of the story is it's a couple of it's a boyfriend and girlfriend who break into like abandoned laboratories at night so they can steal the things they need to build a time machine. It's a time travel story that has almost no time travel.
So it's mostly them trying to make the machine happen?
It's mostly the stuff that happens once mysterious entities are trying to stop them from making the machine.
Well, that's great. We've been speaking with Magdalene Visaggio. Magdalene is an out trans woman and creator of the comic book Kim and Kim, a wild, fun, and punky riot girl ride through the galaxy in all manner of dimensions of space-time. Please give Kim and Kim a read. I think you might enjoy it as much as I have. And thanks, Magdalene, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Please stay tuned for our events and announcements section.
Call when you
Transforming Gender Conference hosts national and local transgender, genderqueer, intersex, trans people of color, activists, and scholars to raise awareness of transgender issues. The keynote speakers this year will be Kat Black, Sam Billington, and Chase Strangio. The conference will be held at the Wolf Law Building on the CU Boulder campus, Thursday, March 8th through Saturday, March 10th. For more information, please visit the Gender and Sexuality Center's website at colorado.edu/GSC. Nudes with Tudes, an out Boulder figure drawing group, meets at the Pride House, 2132 14th Street in Boulder, on the 2nd and 4th Sundays from 2 to 5 p.m. Please bring your own art materials and a donation for the Pride House. For more information, please email mduffy@outboulder.org. Janae Burris, a good friend of Outsources, is having a comedy show on Friday, February 17th, starting at 8:30 p.m. at the Dairy Center, 2590 Walnut Street in Boulder. Janae is a comedian, writer, and actor living in Denver. She's been a featured performer at Portland's Bridgetown Comedy Festival, Limestone Comedy Festival in Bloomington, Indiana, and Denver's High Plains Comedy Festival. She is the 2016 Comedy Works New Faces Champion and performs regularly at both Comedy Works locations in Denver. Janae is also a member of the Pussy Bros, a comedy trio which hosts shows every first Friday at the Comedy Room Room. For more information about this show, please go to the Dairy Center's website. Stay tuned next week for another exciting episode of Outsources.